Moin Moin und herzlich willkommen bei Ganz Gesund, eurem Podcast für einen ganzheitlichen Gesundheitsansatz mit einer ganz, ganz besonderen Folge mal wieder. Der heutige Podcast wird präsentiert von meinem Sponsor Everydays. Everydays ist ein Unternehmen aus Berlin, die einfach unglaublich gute Supplements herstellen. Und genau wie wir das auch in letzter Zeit immer mehr targetieren, das Thema Darmgesundheit ganz groß mit auf dem Schirm haben. Und zwar habe ich in der Vergangenheit euch schon immer mal das Produkt Digest empfohlen. Das ist ein Enzymkomplex, der es tatsächlich schafft, die Verdauungsleistung, die bei uns doch oftmals sehr eingeschränkt ist, weil wir im Stress sind, weil wir nicht richtig gut kauen, weil unsere Verdauung vielleicht einfach schon etwas beeinträchtigt ist, dann mit zu unterstützen. Nämlich in der Form, dass die meisten Kohlenhydrate, Ballaststoffe, Eiweiße und Fette schon in ihre Bestandteile aufgeteilt werden und der Darmtrakt dann einfach für diesen Moment entlastet wird. Ich nehme das immer ganz gerne, wenn ich große, schwere Mahlzeiten zu mir nehme, wenn ich einfach auch merke, wow, ich bin ein bisschen im Stress und ich möchte meinen Körper etwas unterstützen, damit er nicht jetzt über diese 100% gehen muss und ich mich dann selbst überfordere. Deswegen ist Digester ein sehr interessantes Produkt und auch ein recht neues Produkt von Everydays, und zwar das Produkt Care. Das habe ich jetzt hier gerade auch an der Hand, was ihr nicht sehen könnt. Und zwar ist das ein Pulver, ein Ballaststoffpulver im Wesentlichen, was darauf ausgelegt ist, den Darm zum einen zu heilen und zum anderen auch gute Darmbakterien zu füttern. Das machen wir nämlich mit Ballaststoffen. Die heißen ja nicht umsonst Ballaststoffe. Da wurde früher von ausgegangen, dass sie Ballast sind für den Körper, weil sie nicht gänzlich verdaut werden können, aber weit gefehlt, Bakterien können nämlich sich von diesen Ballaststoffen ernähren und deswegen sollten wir genug Hülsenfrüchte, Obst und Gemüse essen, aber nicht immer funktioniert das und manchmal ist es auch einfacher, im Leben ein Pulver zu nehmen, anstatt dann komplex zu kochen oder sich Salate zu schnippeln. Das mag es immer mal geben. Ich persönlich nehme dieses Pulver auch als Grundabsicherung, um einfach zu wissen, hey, ich habe einen guten Supplement-Stack und ich weiß genau, ich habe hier einfach eine gute Grundversorgung mit Ballaststoffen. Ich mache mir das ins Frühstück, aber ihr könnt euch das auch in Kaffee machen. Und da sind Galacto-Oligosaccharide drin, Oligofructose, Akazienfasern, aber auch resistente Stärke, Pektine, alles gute Ballaststoffe. Und das Ganze wird nochmal unterfüttert von L-Glutamin, einer Aminosäure, die gut ist, um den Darm zu heilen, sowie andere Aminosäuren, Glycin, L-Arginin und ein paar Kofaktoren wie Zink, Vitamin B2, Vitamin D, Vitamin C. Von daher, ja, seid ihr da einfach sehr gut aufgestellt, ein schön zusammengestelltes, sehr smartes Produkt. Und wie immer gibt es für meine Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer hier im Podcast immer nochmal die Möglichkeit, ein bisschen zu sparen. Erstens gibt es diese beiden Produkte auch als Bundle immer mal wieder. Da dürft ihr gerne gucken, ob die noch verfügbar sind. Aber auch einzeln lohnt sich das Ganze und ihr bekommt mit meinem Code MyBodyMind immer nochmal 10% auf das gesamte Sortiment. Also egal, was ihr dort findet, das gesamte Sortiment auch auf Smart Protein. Das ist ja meine Grundversorgung für Proteine, die ich jeden Tag nehme. Ich mag die Firma einfach gerne. Ich finde, die haben eine tolle Unternehmensphilosophie und ich unterstütze einfach gerne Firmen, die ich für gut und für fair erachte, die ich für nachhaltig erachte. Gerade bei Produkten, die ich jeden Tag nehme, hat das für mich auch einfach nochmal eine große Auswirkung. Ob das für euch der Fall ist, weiß ich nicht, aber für mich zählt das einfach immer nochmal mit rein. Gute Produkte, gute Firma, gutes Preis-Leistungs-Verhältnis und deswegen kann ich euch das empfehlen. Gerne mit dem Code MyBodyMind sparen und das Ganze verlinken wir euch gerne auch nochmal unten in den Shownotes. Und jetzt geht's weiter zum Podcast. Hier und da bringe ich euch immer mal ein paar Folgen, die vielleicht über das gesundliche Thema hinausgehen. Wir hatten beispielsweise die Folge über meinen Großvater, der seine Erlebnisse im Krieg aufgeschrieben hat, die ich dann ein bisschen als Erinnerung auch für die Neuzeit mit halb aufbewahren wollen. Wir hatten hier einen Podcast von einer ganz süßen Frau, der Margot mit 95 Jahren, die einfach noch so viel Lebensenergie und Esprit versprüht hat. Und das ist auch mal wieder eine Folge, die mir besonders am Herzen liegt. Das ist das erste Mal nämlich, dass wir in 6 Jahren versuchen, hier was mit unserer Community auf die Beine zu stellen. Und diesmal brauche ich tatsächlich eure Hilfe, nicht für mich, sondern für einen, wie ich finde, ganz besonderen und unglaublich interessanten, auch in Teilen inspirierenden Menschen, und zwar Dud. Ich habe Dud kennengelernt bei einem Urlaub. Und wie das immer so ist, ein Urlaub, von dem ich eigentlich nicht gedacht habe, dass er besonders spektakulär wird, hat sich dann doch als doch was ganz anderes entpuppt. Und zwar war ich mit meiner Familie im Jahr 2024 auf einem stinknormalen, langweiligen Urlaub in Ägypten. Wir brauchten einfach mal ein bisschen Sonne. Und wir haben das der Kinder wegen gemacht. Und nun gut, wir waren dort in einem typischen Hotelkomplex und ich habe die Zeit wie immer genossen, um meine Morgenroutine durchzuführen. Habe morgens regelmäßig meditiert am Strand. Das ist ja etwas, was ich einfach sehr genieße in Ruhe. Und ihr könnt euch das vorstellen, es war schon so ein bisschen warm und die Bediensteten vor Ort haben schon angefangen, so ein paar Liegen aufzubauen, den Sand so ein bisschen zu säubern und habe dann aus der Ferne immer, nachdem ich dann fertig war mit dem Meditieren für ein paar Tage, jemanden gesehen, einen jungen Mann, der immer mal rüber geguckt hatte und wir einfach ein bisschen Blickkontakt hatten und ein paar Mal habe ich ihn beim Aufräumen dann auch gehört und zwar nicht ihn, sondern er hat Musik gehört, die mir halt sehr vertraut ist und zwar Tupac und wir sind irgendwie über Musik und über Meditieren dann aufeinander gestoßen. Er hat mich gefragt, was ich mache, er würde das auch erlernen, er findet das interessant. Ich habe ihn gefragt bezüglich seiner Musik, na, und wie das dann so ist. Das eine führt zum anderen und wir haben dann Tag für Tag etwas tiefere Gespräche geführt und irgendwann hatte Dutzig auf meinen Fragen hin, also nicht auf seine Initiative, sondern auf meinen Fragen hin ein bisschen geöffnet, wie so sein Leben ausgestaltet ist, was Dutt für eine Art von Mensch ist, vor allen Dingen auch, wie Dutt lebt, wie Dutt nach Hogada gekommen ist, weil er offenkundig aufgrund seiner Hautfarbe zumindest kein Native war und ist, also nicht direkt aus dem Gebiet Ägypten kommt, sondern aus den tieferen Regionen Afrikas und hat sich herausgestellt, dass Dutt gebürtiger Südsudaner ist. Und von da an hat Dutt mir eine ganz inspirierende Geschichte über sein Leben erzählt. Eine Geschichte, wie sie für uns, glaube ich, relativ absurd klingt, für uns alle, die doch in den allermeisten Fällen in ziemlich behüteten Sozialstrukturen, in ziemlich normalen Perspektiven aufwachsen. Für viele Menschen, die in diesem Gebiet leben, ist das aber gang und gäbe. Und deswegen ist Dutt, glaube ich, kein absoluter afrikanischer Einzelfall, sondern in Teilen sogar die Regel. Und ich möchte einfach hier in diesem Podcast zum einen eine gewisse, jetzt fehlt mir der deutsche Begriff, Awareness schaffen, also eine gewisse Achtsamkeit, eine gewisse Aufmerksamkeit auch dafür erregen, wie gut es uns in Teilen geht und wie schlecht es manch anderen Menschen vielleicht geht, durch was für Leid Menschen gehen mussten, auch im jungen Alter. Und ich möchte die Geschichte nicht von mir aus erstmal erzählen, sondern ich würde gern Dutt die Geschichte selber erzählen lassen. Das ist aufgrund des Netzes im Sudan, wo sich Dutt gerade wieder befindet. Warum, das wird er euch noch erklären. Einfach sehr, sehr schwierig gewesen, ihm das zu ermöglichen, weil das Netz im Sudan häufig abgebrochen ist. Wir haben das probiert über ein Interview. Dutt spricht tatsächlich gutes Englisch, das hat er sich selber beigebracht. Es ist aber das erste Mal, dass wir jetzt hier im Podcast nach doch, ich glaube, dem vierten Jahr oder dritten oder vierten Jahr, in dem wir uns im Podcast befinden, auf Englisch haben. Mit eurem Schulenglisch könnt ihr das aber tatsächlich in der Regel gut verstehen. Mir ist aber durchaus bewusst, dass nicht jeder Englisch versteht oder manchen Leuten jetzt dann auch das zuwider ist, wo sie sagen, naja, dann schalte ich halt ab. Ist aber total schade, weil ich glaube, dass wir uns alle so eine Chance nehmen würden, einfach eine andere Perspektive A zu bekommen und B, einen Menschen wirklich zu helfen. Einer Person, wo wir wirklich was ändern können, wo wir wirklich gemeinsam ein bisschen was drehen können. Deswegen werde ich im Nachgang auch die Geschichte von Dutt nochmal versuchen, im Kurzen in Deutsch zusammenzufassen. Ich hoffe, ich mache das nicht zu knapp, aber ich versuche das auch nicht zu ausschweifend zu machen, weil ich denke, wenn man die Basics versteht, dann hat man es schon verstanden. Schöner ist es natürlich, wenn ihr das von Dutt direkt hört und dann auch einfach seine Gestik, sein Esprit vielleicht nochmal mitnehmen, gerade wenn ihr das dann auch sehen könnt auf YouTube. Ich habe mir einfallen lassen, dass wir dort helfen können. Und ich habe sowas noch nie gemacht, deswegen habe ich in der Form auch keine Expertise und keine Ahnung, wie stark unsere Community ist, ob hier überhaupt die Bereitschaft ist, anderen Leuten zu helfen. Ich habe das mal bei Instagram abgeklopft und da waren, glaube ich, relativ viele dabei. Es ist aber manchmal so, dass man in erster Instanz sagt, ja, ich helfe gerne und wenn es dann um Hilfe geht, dann duckt man sich vielleicht doch weg. Es geht nicht darum, dass ihr körperlich helfen müsst, es geht darum, dass wir gemeinsam mit Geld, das ist einfach das, was am meisten Sinn macht, dort helfen können. Und für gewöhnlich in so einem RTL-Spendenmarathon sagt man immer, jeder Euro zählt. Das ist mit Sicherheit auch so. Aber ich glaube, offen zu kommunizieren, ein Euro wird jetzt nicht viel helfen, sein Leben wirklich in die Hand zu nehmen, sondern wenn ihr sagt, ihr könnt vielleicht was entbehren, vielleicht sind es 5 Euro, vielleicht sind es 10, ich sag mal, sinnvoller wäre irgendwie was mit 50, 100 € und Co., dann wäre das schon wirklich was ganz, ganz Tolles und da würdet ihr mir, aber vor allen Dingen Dutt natürlich einen riesigen, riesigen Gefallen tun und einem Menschen, der scheinbar keine Perspektive mehr besitzt, einfach eine neue Perspektive ermöglichen. Von daher würde ich mich total freuen, wenn ihr mitspenden könnt. Ich weiß, dass 50 Euro auch für manche viel Geld sind, aber für die allermeisten von uns kann man sich vielleicht einfach mal hinterfragen, wenn ich jetzt 50 Euro weniger in meinem Portemonnaie hätte oder wenn ich letztes Jahr gesagt hätte, in meinem ganzen Jahr, dass ich gearbeitet habe, hätte ich 50 Euro netto weniger verdient. Das hätte wahrscheinlich 99% der Leute, die jetzt hier zuhören, überhaupt nicht gekratzt. Das hätten sie gar nicht gemerkt. Das Leben hätte sich nicht geändert. Vielleicht wäre der eine einmal weniger essen gegangen im Jahr, was vielleicht auch gar nicht so verkehrt wäre. Von daher möchte ich euch da einfach eine gewisse Perspektive geben, dass das wirklich jemandem helfen kann. Und vielleicht auch mal eine Perspektive, was können wir mit dem Geld machen? Dutt hat mir gesagt, und das hat er ein bisschen verklausulisiert, und ich glaube, er hat sich da auch ein bisschen für geschämt, dass er gerne nach, ja, ich glaube 13 oder 14 Jahre waren es jetzt, seine Mama mal wieder sehen wollen würde. Etwas, was für uns, was relativ selbstverständlich ist, wo man, selbst wenn man bewusst sagt, ich möchte woanders hinziehen, doch in der Regel die Möglichkeit hat, wenn die Mutter noch lebt, sie zu besuchen. Für Dutt ist das einfach nicht möglich gewesen, und er hat auch gesagt, ich bräuchte da schon, weil ich innerhalb des Sudans fliegen müsste. Es gibt eigentlich keine Möglichkeit, sie auf dem Zugweg zu bekommen. Also er müsste einen Flug hinbuchen, Flug zurück, müsste versuchen, dann halt irgendwie vielleicht sogar zu Fuß oder mit irgendeiner Art von Beförderungsmittel zu ihr in die Dörfer zu kommen. Da hat er gesagt, er bräuchte mindestens 250 Euro. Das ist für ihn einfach unvorstellbar viel Geld. Und für uns als große Community wäre das wahrscheinlich ein Fingerschnipsen, das ihm zu ermöglichen. Ich habe dort auch schon im Vorfeld ein bisschen mit Geld ausgestattet, weil er sonst einfach gar nicht die Möglichkeit hätte, sich Internet zu leisten. Er ist gerade nicht an ein Stromnetz angeschlossen. Das heißt, er muss, um sein Handy zu laden, in die Stadt gehen, muss dort sein Handy laden und dann halt wieder zurückkommen. Das sind die Verhältnisse, in denen er sich gerade bewegt. 250 Euro wären schön und es wäre gut, wenn wir das insgesamt schaffen. Aber das ist ehrlich gesagt nicht das, was ich mir erhoffe und was ich erstreben würde. Ich würde mir erhoffen, dass wir ein bisschen mehr Geld sammeln können. Und ich kann euch noch nicht ganz genau sagen, was wir damit machen, weil ich keine Ahnung habe, ob wir als Community 1.000 Euro sammeln können, 2.000, 5.000 oder 10.000 Euro. Ich habe wirklich keine Ahnung. Ich weiß es nicht. Es ist ein Versuch. Aber wer es nicht versucht, der kann es am Ende dann auch nicht in der Zukunft einschätzen. Und davon wird so ein bisschen abhängig sein, was ich mit Dutt machen kann. Ich werde ihn dann mit Sicherheit auch mit Zeit unterstützen und mit meiner Expertise, um das Geld nicht verpuffen zu lassen, sondern um ihn das Geld in geordneten Schritten dann zu überführen, damit wir zusammen einen Plan ausarbeiten, um Dutt ein besseres Leben zu ermöglichen. Das könnte sein, dass wir ihm versuchen, ein besseres Leben vor Ort zu ermöglichen, indem er dort in eine gewisse Selbstständigkeit überführen kann, sein Leben, indem er dort seinen Lebensunterhalt dann auch nachhaltig bestreiten kann. Das könnte unter anderem aber auch sein, dass er vielleicht in einen etwas sicheren Drittstaaten geflogen werden kann und von dort aus vielleicht eine andere Perspektive bekommt über einen Arbeitsplatz, vielleicht über eine Art von schulischer Weiterbildung und dergleichen. Und das ist auch was ich sehr interessant fände, was aber natürlich auch ein bisschen Vorbereitungszeit benötigt. Und am Ende machen wir uns nichts vor. So ist das Leben auch ein bisschen Geld. Von daher, ja, freue ich mich über jeden Euro, den ihr mehr gebt. Und wenn ihr jetzt seht, auf der Spendenseite, die ich hier reinschreiben werde, betterplace.org ist die Domain. Dort kann man für ihn spenden. Und da werde ich auch den Link unten in die Shownotes des Podcasts packen. Wir werden den Link auf jeden Fall auch bei YouTube hosten. Und wenn ihr den auf keinen Fall in irgendeiner Form finden solltet, dann werden wir den Link in jedem Fall auch nochmal gerne euch auch per Mail bereitstellen. Das heißt, wenn ihr das nicht finden könnt, schreibt gerne eine Mail an fragen@mybodymind.de. Guckt gerne auf unsere Profile bei Instagram und Co. Schreibt mich da an. Überall, wo es für euch am einfachsten ist. Ich habe einfach total Lust, dem Dutt zu helfen. Und natürlich kannst du in dem einen oder anderen jetzt auch zu einer Überlegung kommen, na gut, wo hören wir auf, wo fangen wir an, wenn wir jetzt anfangen, bei einer Person und einer Person zu helfen, was bringt das schon bei so vielen Milliarden Leuten, die leiden? Das stimmt, nur ich glaube, wenn man mit dieser Perspektive ins Leben geht, dann kann man nie, oder wird man niemandem helfen und davon ist mit Sicherheit gar keinem geholfen. Und vielleicht ist es auch schöner, mal bei einer Person anzufangen und zu sehen, hey, wir alle können was bewirken mit kleinen Mitteln, und ich werde euch da auf jeden Fall auch up to date halten. Ich werde euch da alle Informationen weitergeben. Und wie schön wäre das, wenn wir halt irgendwann hier ein Foto von Dutt hätten, wie er seine Schwester und seine Mama besucht, oder wenn er vielleicht hier wirklich in der Lage ist, eine Ausbildung zu machen und das erste Mal in seinem Leben eine Perspektive hat. Das würde mir unglaublich zu Herzen gehen, und ich glaube, das reicht anhand der Vorrede.
First of all, welcome, Dutt. First time to have someone in our podcast who is speaking English. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good, sir. Thank you so much. I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, that's the best thing to hear about. And yeah, maybe just let us start our journey about your life. And maybe you would like to start about telling us a bit about your childhood in South Sudan. How was it like?
Okay. So I would like to welcome everybody to my childhood life in South Sudan. So basically, I will start it from the beginning, that where I get to know myself, you know. So I was basically like, you know, a child without a father. That was the best thing I get to know myself, because when I was born, it was only me and my mom and my two sisters. Yeah, the place I was born is a small village in the Nusron Bahr Ghazal. It was actually really, really small village. But like for me, I didn't have no idea. I didn't have no idea that there's like some big countries or like some big cities outside there. Or like there's like a big lifestyle. Other people are living better than us. I didn't have no idea. So everything was fine with me when I was born. But just like the most harder things that I see other kids that was calling their fathers, my father, my dad, but I didn't have something like this, you know. My mom told me that when I was born, 3 days later, I lost my father.
Did he leave or did he die?
3 days when I was born.
Okay, and did he leave your family or did he die?
He died and leave me and my family.
Okay.
He died. Yeah, yeah. So when I was born, like our neighbors, they used to call me that I'm bad luck. You know, like I'm a bad luck child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like somebody was born and then somebody something like this just happened. So they used to call me like a bad luck child. I grew up with my mother and my two sisters together. And my mom, she was really, really like, you know, she was really like trying to take care of us. The life we had, actually, I thought that's the whole life in the around the world. I thought everybody lived like this, you know. I was thinking maybe like, you know, this village that I'm living in it, this is actually the whole world. Like there is, it's not bigger than this. There is no other places than this place. It's the same like this. And when I see like the cloud like end to the like somewhere else, I thought maybe that's the end of the world, you know. That's what used to come in my mind. Yeah. So after 3 years later, I became like, I experienced myself, like I know myself. When I was born and my dad passed away, 3 years or like 4 years later, I just like to know myself that I'm really existing. You know,
so that's your first memories of your childhood, right?
Yeah, of my childhood. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But story continue, because this is how it begin. That's how it begin, like to know myself. And when I know myself, all I saw was my mom and my sisters, and also other people around us. My mom, she moved us to another place. To another city, because the life when we used to live in this place, it was really hard for her. She had to go for fishing in the during the dry season, and during the rain season, she grow like a crops in the palm, and this is how she raising us. So doing this from time to time, she decided to move us to the town, this small town. It was about 800 kilometers from where we live. All these things, I remember them because we was like literally walking, because there are no ways there. So we walked to the town. We walked to the
800,
town.
800 kilometers, you walked to the town, you four?
It was like about 4 days to reach the town.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So we reached to the town. Actually, there is no house or like somebody we know that we are going to them. No, we just walking nearest the town. And when we reached to the town, it was actually quite, you know, better than where we came from. Because I went there, like I find like the people that like they gather together like this, like a lot of the buildings. You can see them from very far. Even the house look the same like our houses. But this is quite different because there are a lot, you know. There's a lot of them in town, yeah. So we came to the town, and when we get to the town, my mom, she tried like to look for some place that we should stay, like, and she luckily find, you know, she find some other people that she used to know, like, from time to time, long time ago, and we stay with them in the house. So we stay with them in the house, and everything went well, everything went fine, you know. My mom, she start to work, like, helping other people, and then after she finished helping other people, she can get something from them, like maybe a food, or like they give us clothes that we wear, on something like this. And then life became, like, you know, for me, it was the best life for me, better than a village life. So I love it, staying in the city. Because when I came to the city, actually, my first time I saw children, they are going to school. No, so now I was surprised because I didn't know where I came from. There was no school. There was nothing called school. We heard about the school, but there are no school. Nobody there. Nobody know how to speak another language except our language that we speak. You know?
Of course, yeah.
So a story continue. We stay like for a season, like one season in the town. It was like a dry season. And then when the rain season came, my mom, she told us that we should go back to our village because we need to go and grow some crop so we can get ready for the prepare for the next season.
Okay.
For me, it was not the best idea. I refused. I say no. I say no. I try, like, I try my best, you know, because, you know, like, I was seeing, like, you know, being like an environment that you are like happy, you know, there is something that you see that entertain you, like you, and an environment that you thinking like maybe like your future is here, you know. So that's what I was thinking. Yeah. So my mom, she didn't agree with me, and she was so worried because I actually make another plan. I say, okay, if you guys gonna go, I will stay here by myself, and also I can try to live by myself, and you guys can still go back to the village.
Oh wow! How old have you been there?
I think I was 10. Was 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at this time, you also visited school, or you just planned to visit school?
I didn't go to school yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't go to school yet. Then she refused, and she said that we must go together because, like, the most important thing that we came in here now is because of me. She said, we are coming here because of you. We want to find you something that you, so you can grow, you become a man in the house, because she was only a ladies in the house. And she was saying that we are bringing you here because we want to feed you so you can grow to be the man in the house, so we cannot leave you behind. We are so worried about you. So my flat, it didn't work, but I was really mad, you know. I didn't like it. Yes, I love the town because, you know, like, you can eat the biscuit, you know, and also, like, you can see, like, beautiful things like cars, you know. And that was like, I'm dreaming, you know. I always dream, like, we sit together, me and my family, and I say to them, you know, I'm going to have a car, and I'm going to be like somebody who is really, really, really rich. Already I start knowing about, like, the long building, like, you know, like a high building. So I just, like, a joke, I say, like, you know, I'm going to build here in this village. I'm going to build, like, really, really big building. And then, so these are the things that's just, you know, in my mind. So when they are taking me away from the town to go back to the village, I'm feeling like, you know, there is no way I'm going to come back again. So, and now everything is like, it's going to be stopped. So I didn't like, we went back to the village, and my brain is always, you know, I'm always thinking about town. I'm always thinking about town, like a lot. Like, I spend much of my time thinking about the town, you know. And what I'm thinking about town is like the lifestyle, you know, because I used to believe since I was a kid, there is like a much better life than this life we are living, just because my family, they didn't know about it, you know. Yeah, so I used to believe, like, let's say, like, we can, like, stay in town here, we would be like these other people who have, like, a better houses, and, like, they have, like, a cars, and also, like, they learn how to speak other people language, like English and Arabic. This was the most mean language in my country. So I couldn't stop thinking, bro. I'm thinking. And then one day I literally tried to run out from the village. Mm-hmm. And then I moved back to the town.
To live there alone?
Yeah, I came there alone, yes. It took me like 6 to 7 days. I don't know, like those days, it's like 6 to 7 days because I was walking alone on the street. So I walk, when I get tired, I can sleep anywhere I find. I can go some places. Maybe if I'm lazy to walk, I can stay with other people to spend a day with them until I reach to the town. So I came to the town. When I came to the town, it's not the same, like, you know, it's not the same like when I was with my mom and my sister. No, now this is like completely different things. So I'm not finding, like, it's not easy for me to find a place to sleep now. And also not everybody, like, is interesting to put me in the house because they don't know who is my family, or maybe, like, I'm somebody who is coming to be the victim or to steal something from them. So it was not the same, yes. I'm luckily, course. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'm luckily find some other boys who have the same story like me, because actually it's like a hub of people from where I came from. They have the same situation that I have, like, right now, even today. Mm-hmm. So I met them, and also, like, we start to live together on the street together. We collect in the day, we collect a bottle of the water, you know, the bottle of the water and the bottle of soda, and we can sell them. And that's how we make living, you know. So we sell them, and then we get a little money. We go buy something to eat on it. And then in the night, we can sleep anywhere. We can sleep under the trees or, like, behind some other people's houses. And then tomorrow in the morning, we wake up, and then life continues. So, okay.
And at this point, sorry, dude, at this point, you didn't even manage to go to school, right?
I didn't go to school yet.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I didn't go to school yet, yeah. So after this time, when I came back to the village, you know, my mother, she was desperately looking for me. She couldn't know what happened to me, where I go, if I went back to the city, or something, because also there's like wild animal from where we live, like lion, they can eat somebody. So she was like desperately looking for me. Where did I go? Nobody know. She made it, and after a month, she came to the town where I used to live. And she looked for me, like, really. She really go around to try to find me. She asked people. And then some other people told her that, like, they saw me on the street, you know. But they just didn't know that that's me because I was young. So she keep continuing, like, looking for me. And then one day in the afternoon, you know, like, something really strange just happened. Like, you know, we met on the way, like, accidentally in the town, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we accidentally met together. So she was, like, standing there, and I'm standing here because she can't believe, look, you know. She don't believe. She's thinking, like, maybe she's dreaming, but she's actually dreaming, you know. She's staying there looking like this, and also the same thing to me. And then a moment later, we both ran, we hugged each other. She cried, I also cried, you know. And she said, yes, I've been looking for you, like, for a month now, and I am so blessed, so happy that I literally, like, saw you at the moment.
What an emotional moment.
She took me. First thing she did, she bought me something to eat. She thought I was hungry, like I didn't have eat nothing since I go from the house. That's what she's thinking. So she thought, like, I didn't eat anything since I left the house. So she rushed, she bought me something to eat, and she start again an agreement. We have to go back to the village. You cannot stay here. She involved like a lot of people from the community, and these people like came to talk to me. They say, you have to go back with your mother. This is not a good place for you. Stay in the village. No. And she actually, like, you know, she's not happy for all my decision that I'm doing, that I'm staying alone. So I didn't find a chance to go to school. So we moved back again to the village.
Okay.
Yeah. We moved back to the village. And the week after we go back to the village, I direct came back to the city. I ran again. Yeah. Because actually my mind was telling me something, you know. My mind is telling me something, that there is something school, and there is also like better things that you have to do than staying with your family in this small village. You can make it or you can live there, but that was not my happiness at all. So after a week, I went back to the village, to the town, and I start, you know, I changed my way of living. So I, you know, like this tissue, yes, people use for cleaning shoes, you know. Like shining shoes. I don't know. It's like flushing shoes. Yeah, you know that.
Yeah, of course, of course.
But yeah. Leather shoes. Yeah. So I start that business, and it became better than, like, you know, collecting a bottle of the water. It became much better, and I keep doing that business from time to time. And then one day, one man came to clean his shoes from my place. And he gave me the shoes, and I'm cleaning his shoes. He told me, boy, why you don't go to school? And you're a very, very smart boy. You're cleaning my shoes very nice. You look like you really know what you are doing. Why you don't go to school? You know, so many people ask me this question, so I was not interested to answer this question. I just keep, like, you know, cleaning his shoes. And then after I'm cleaning his shoes, he say to me, where's your family and where's your mom? Because I want to help you to take you to school. He just decided, like, alone like this. So when he said this, I become like, you know, I was like, yeah, this guy is talking now. So I have to answer him. I told him, I explained everything to him. My family, they don't live here with me. It's only me and my family. They live in the village and something like that. He said to me, okay, look, to be honest to you, I'm not going to give you money in your hand to pay it in the school, but I can also, like, teach you how to make more money so you can pay your school bill and something like this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, okay. It came to me like multiple times, like a week. Come to me, I clean his shoes. So then we talk about these things. And one day he came and he told me the business plan. He told me, look, I am the headmaster of the school. He's the headmaster of the school, yes. So I have right to ask my teachers, so you can clean the shoes in the morning before school start. And then when the teachers are getting the salary, they can give you some, everybody can give you like a little money, and this little money you can pay them for a school bill, for your school fees.
Okay.
No, like something.
So actually, you had to clean their shoes to be able to go to school, right?
Yeah. So I can be able to go to school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the school, they start, and I move there. I wake up like around 6 o'clock in the morning, because, you know, like in South Sudan, the weather is hot, so school, they start early in the morning. They start around 7 o'clock. The first classes, they start. So I wake up as 6 o'clock, I go like take the shoes, because they stay in the hostel. They stay in the school is made, and the teacher, they come from different places, so they don't have a house where they live. They sleep in the school.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to wake up in the morning, come take the shoes, clean them, and then I go to my class.
Okay,
this is my first time. That's my first time how I get to school. And when I get in the school, you know, I find a kid like who stay for the whole life, you know, like the time they've been like some kid, they was in the school when they are 3 years old, 4 years old. And it's just like my first time I come to school. So I was thinking, like, you know, like making money, like making a business outside is much better than I sit inside the class to learn something I don't even have idea. Like, what am I going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Or like, when it's going to take me to another level? Maybe like I will end up in this class and then I will not go to another class. So I didn't like the situation. Yes, I'm inside the class, but I'm thinking, you know, like I'm thinking about like how to make money. Only like to bring my family, to live with my family together in the same place that I live. This is the only thing in my head. Like I'm thinking how to make money all the time. Yes. Also, like I made another plan. Like I buy like, you know, like a biscuit outside and put them in my bag. And when we have like a school break, I can go to the gate and then I sell them to the kid in the school. So I'm in the school for my first year. I did nothing, you know. I did nothing at all. I was like, you know, I was thinking maybe like this school is not for me or like something. But making money, it was like, you know, the bad thing for me because I was putting like responsibility in my head that I say like maybe like collecting £1 and £2 like is gonna make me rich to bring my family to stay with me together. So I find it out that way. So that's how I went to school, and this is the very first moment and the thing that I can actually remember about my life in South Sudan.
Okay, so afterwards, you went to school, and for how long did you went to school? For how many years?
It was that when I went to school that year, it was only just 1 year in the school.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just 1 year in the school. And before I came to school, like, you know, like I know how to read A, B, C, G, all these stuff because I hear them from other children outside. And mm-hmm. also, like, I was interested about knowing other people's language because I want to be a better person than life I'm living now. So mm-hmm. what they was actually teaching us is not much than A, B, C, D in the school. They can only teach us, like, A, B, C, and then after they can change it, like, A for apple, and then also like 1, 2, 3, something like that. It was not bigger than this. Okay.
Yeah. So only the simple steps at school. And yeah, you can say that street raised you, right? That you were educated by your own and that you learned from the kids around you. When we met each other, you told me that you left South Sudan for living a dream. When I remember right, you wanted to study in Cairo, right? Maybe you can tell me something, how you got from South Sudan to Egypt.
Yes. About my journey from South Sudan to Egypt. It was in 2011, you know, after we got independent from Sudan, something like this. So the situation of the country, there was not like, you know, there was not so good. There was like a lot of thing going on, like a civil war and some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I just like, you know, met other people like moving to Egypt from the borders, you know. So I joined these people and we went to Sudan. It was actually my first time I went to Khartoum. I never been there. We went to Sudan and we stay in Sudan. And then after we literally like went from Aswan in Egypt and we sneak out from Sudan and we went to Egypt. It was not so easy.
By
we
food?
Got some people,
did,
some
did,
of
did
us.
You they walk made, by food?
Yeah.
Did you walk by food? So you walked from
no,
South
no, we,
Sudan
yeah, we
to
walked
Sudan?
From South Sudan to Sudan, yes. From South Sudan to Sudan, yes. And then from Egypt, from Sudan to Egypt, we was going by a taxi, like a taxi, like these cars for transporting goodies, mm-hmm. like cargoes, okay. Yeah.
And you hide it inside?
We hide inside when we are close to like, because the drivers, they know when they are going to the police booth or like when they are going to the town. So we stay okay. outside with them because it's hot inside. And when we are close, they say us, no, come out and go inside. We hide. We hide, but we didn't make it. We didn't make it to go to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
We came to the border of Egypt. It's called Shalatin, you know, some place mm-hmm. called Shalatin in Egypt. There's the police. They get inside and they remove us. It was like six of us. And then they send four of guys because they are from Sudan and they have a passport. They have like a paper document. So they send them back to Khartoum. And they're like, for me and the other one guy, we didn't have any papers. So they keep us. And when they're keeping us, actually, this is like my very best moment. I am about to know anything about Taiwan. I didn't have any language. I don't speak English like I used to now or Arabic, you know. It was really mm-hmm. not so easy for me. These guys are confused. They say they cannot send me back and they cannot keep me with them. So they don't know what they're going to do. They're confused. And then one day the guy come to me and he say he talked with somebody in Cairo, like somebody is his friend. And he say like he gonna give me a job in McDonald's to clean the tables
mm-hmm.
and wash the dishes or something like that. So he came to me and he tell me this thing. I was like, okay. You know, I'm excited. Yeah, I like
why not?
It. Yeah, because actually me, I just wanna be in the city, you know, I just wanna go there. So they got me in the police car, you know. And then they drive me to Cairo. And then they give me to this guy. This guy take me and I stay with this guy doing my job. You know, I was so happy to eat like a burger for the first time. You know, after I finish my work, I take like a Big Mac, you know, I eat it. And then the guy also, he give me some place to sleep. For me, it was like, you know. It was like the best place I ever slept in my life. So I was not complaining. I didn't know maybe like some other people also there like still have like a nice place like the hotel in Hogada, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I stayed there. I worked with him. This guy actually like we didn't have any problem because he realized that I'm actually coming for work and I'm actually doing a great job than other guys he had before. So he kept me with him, yes. He was not paying me the good money, but I was not up to money. So I stayed there. I was up to like getting experience, getting to know the city. That was only my plan. I was not like thinking about how to make more money, no. So I stayed with him, and I only like every time I have to speak with Egyptian boys in English, you know. Every time they ask me, I have to go home later, also study like a little bit of English. And then tomorrow I come back, how to make a chicken, how to fry the chicken. And also that's how I came up that I became a really professional fried chicken chef in this restaurant for the first time. So I stayed with this guy like for 2 years in Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the best life, but it was actually the best life I lived before. And then one day I moved to, like, I was going, like, to see the Red Sea. Because, like, people say, like, Red Sea, Red Sea, Red Sea, Red Sea, Red Sea. And I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to go see the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. And me going to see the Red Sea, I forget that I'm from South Sudan and I don't have papers. And if I go to Red Sea, I didn't know, like, there's something going to happen to me. Like, you know, I don't actually know, like, people move from place to place was like, papers.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, I get the car, I booked the car. Right now I have the money, like, I have Egyptian pound, something like that. So I went, I booked the bus by myself, was about 300 Egyptian pound. And then I took the bus and I went to... Hogada, So now come to Hogada. The police get inside and they're checking people. They say, can I see your passport? Can I see your passport? This is what I hear. And I was like, why this guy? This guy is going to ask me about passport. So he came to me and he say, can you show us your passport, your ID? And I was like, no, I don't have the passport. I said, okay, come with us. They take me down. And they put me somewhere. And they asked the car to go. And the guy from the car, the driver was saying, no, I cannot go and leave this guy. Because he was coming in with our company. And our company make sure that everybody reached to Hogada safely. They say, no, we are police. And we're going to send him in another car after we know what's going on with him. So the bus left me. They keep me with him, with them. And in the morning, the police car, he came to my place, to the place that they put me inside. It's like a house, but you don't have a key to go outside. And they put me in jail.
Just because you didn't have any ID?
Yeah, because I didn't have any ID, yes. And the plan, it was like from long, long time ago in 2017, they would have deported me, like, you know, to come back to South Sudan. Mm-hmm. And we are having conversation with them every day. I'm talking with them every day. And I don't know what's going on with them. I think for them, like, it doesn't seem like somebody who is going to harm somebody in the town. Or I don't seem like somebody who is going to do something to harm other people. So one day, one guy, he came to me and they say to me that I should not go to Hogada, but I have to go back to Cairo and then I should see my embassy so they can get me a passport. Mm-hmm. And they explained it to me. If you don't get this passport, we will literally, next time we will catch you, we will keep you with us for like 6 months. And then after 6 months, we will deport you back to your country, which is going to be hard for you. So you should go and get your passport.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went back. I went back to Cairo. And first thing I did, I went to a UN, United Nations High Commission of Refugees in Cairo. Mm-hmm. And they helped me with like some card. They give me some card. So this card, I stay with it in Egypt. And then also I could find an easy way to come back to Hogada. I came back to Hogada. And after I get back to Hogada, I went to saw like the Red Sea. And also I stayed there like for a week in Hogada. And in Hogada also, it was like quite easy for me because like a lot of people that was speaking English. My Arabic was not the best, but my English was getting much better and much better. So I tried like to find a job in Hogada, and it was not easy. They couldn't give me like a restaurant job or like a hotel job. They couldn't give it to me, yes. And then one day, it was like actually tomorrow, this is my last day to leave Hogada to come back to my job in Cairo. Mm-hmm. And then the guy...
Still at McDonald's or...?
Yeah, I'm still in McDonald's in Cairo.
In Cairo, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm still in McDonald's in Cairo. But when I was coming here, I was coming to see Hogada. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know.
So in the coffee shop, I'm literally staying, you know, I'm thinking about like, okay, I'm going to call this guy and I will say to him that I'm sorry. I need to come back to job. And then I say, no, if I call him, he will say to me, no, don't come. I will just go. And then I start walking in the restaurant. And if he come and he ask me, who are you? Why did you come back again? I will say, yes, I'm sorry. I was this. And I try to explain myself to him. So like a moment later, one guy from Tunisia, they came and they sit next to me. And they start like, you know, they're speaking about me, you know. They were like, this guy, maybe like he's from Africa. And, you know, like African guys, they are blessed, and you know, like talking about my thing, you know. So, and then maybe like you say, this guy maybe he know how to dance very well, and something like this, yes. So they are talking. I'm having time, and they are having time also, and we see each other, and then we act like we didn't see each other, like both of us at the same time. So he waved at me, like a second time we saw each other, and he said to me, "Hey, bro, come sit here with us." And then we just went into conversation, and these are the guys who like explained to me like animation job. So this guy said to me, "Where are you working?" He was thinking like I'm working somewhere in the hotel in the resort. He was like asking me if I'm working somewhere in the resort in the hotel. But I told him, no, I'm not working here. And I actually said to him that I work in Cairo, but I didn't tell him like what I really do. I didn't say I work in McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So I told him I work in a call center. Yes, I work in a call center, and I'm going to go back to Cairo for my job and something like this. It was like, bro, but you know, like you can also work here with us in the hotel, and you can have a good life, you know, you can make a better money than money that you make in Cairo, and also you can have a better experience here. So I didn't like, you know, I didn't like the conversation, because a lot of people that was telling me about Hogara, like there's like a kidnappers, you know, in Hogara. Maybe like some of the people can act like they're nice to you, and then after they can do something bad to you. So I didn't like the conversation, and then this guy just like, you know, he just paid for my drink that I drink, and also he's still like convincing me, say, look bro, if you want to come to work with us, it's up to you, we will give you 300 euros in a month. Mm-hmm. And also you can also make like extra money from like a disco tour and Tumblr. So let me know. This is my number here. You can call me later, or you can call me tomorrow if you want to work with us. So my mind is that like in two ways now. I say if I go work with this guy, something is going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe like they're gonna kill me, or like they're gonna take my kidney, you know, just mind talk, you know, I'm just thinking that way. And also like if I don't go, and then I miss the chance to like work in resort and then get the money that he told me.
That's a typical dilemma you sometimes have in life. Yeah, you have to choose.
But you had
a bad gut feeling, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, call me at 11 o'clock, like, you know, like the time in the hotel that we used to talk to the guests, hey, do you want to come to disco? That's after 11 o'clock, after we finished the show in the hotel. Mm-hmm. So he called me and he said, if you are free, you can come to us. We are in the club, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, no. These guys, they really want to kidnap me. So, my mind again, I said, now this guy called me at this time, at 11 o'clock. If I go now and something gonna happen to me, I actually don't have nobody going to know me that there's something happened to me in Hogara. So, it's just going to be like, tack, finish. So, I have to go. And also, I'll be really careful because, you know, like, I'm past. If I go there and something will happen to me, maybe I can shout. And maybe some other people who didn't have idea about all these things, they will help me. So I went. I get the taxi, you know, like Hogara taxi, those taxis, yellow and blue. Mm-hmm. I went to the taxi guy, and then I say, I'm going to ask this guy about the name of the club. They told me Calypso Club. So I'm going to ask the guy, I'm going to tell him that I'm going to Calypso. If he told me a club, I will get in the car. But if he says something else, Calypso, I will not go in the car, and then I will go to sleep. So I went. I asked the guy, a taxi driver. I said, yo, I'm going to go to Calypso. And he said, the disco. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now I have to go in a car. So I get in a car, and he drive me to Calypso. And we came to the Calypso. The car stopped the other side of the road, and the Calypso is in the right hand side, in the right hand side of the highway. Mm-hmm. So I stop, and I call him, and he just walk outside the club, and he cross the way, and he go to the other side where we stop the car, and he paid a car driver, taxi driver. And then we crossed the road together and we walk in the club. This is my first time in the club now. You know? Hmm. My first time in the club, like when the then everybody was so waiting to see, like, you know, my African energy style, like, you know, dancing and like interacting with people. So, like, for me, like, I don't have any problem with anybody. Even, like, you know, when I don't have experience about doing something, I can sometimes easily do it, you know. So, this guy, they're like, you know, like, people stay around in the club, and then they push somebody inside, like, to dine, like, 2 minute dine or, like, 1 minute dine. And then you get out, and then they take another somebody inside. So this guy is a manager of the animation team, and he want to see, like, if I have energy, like, to entertain guests in the hotel. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I jump there, you know, I jump there, I make my things, you know. I make my move, dance move, I was happy, everybody see me, I'm smiling, dancing, you know. So everything went well. Everything went well. After we finished the club, he paid for me another taxi, and he said to me, tomorrow you should come at 9 o'clock in the morning to start working with us. But because it's your first time, you are going to come at 1 o'clock. So collect your luggage, and then you come to the hotel. We will give you the room, and we will give you everything you need to stay with us. I was like, yeah, now I'm there now. So I went home, I slept. In the morning, I wake up. I didn't even wait for 1 o'clock. I wake up around 10 o'clock. I collect my luggage. 11 o'clock, I'm already in the hotel. So I came to the hotel. And now I have a UN refugee card. Mm-hmm. So he take my refugee card and give it to animation ship animation. And he said to him that me and animation ship, we should walk upstairs for the HR so they can, like, give me a job in the hotel. Mm-hmm. We went upstairs. This guy asked for my passport. But I say, no, I didn't have a passport. He said, no, if you don't have a passport, we cannot give you a job because this is a tourist job. And we cannot employ you with the UN card. So go get your passport and get your resident visa and come. We will get you a job anytime you come back. Boom. I say, okay, at least I tried. So we went down and we went to animation office. When I supposed to be coming back from the HR, I supposed to come back with a uniform, animation uniform, and some papers that I'm accepted to work here. So we came back, we came with nothing. Mm-hmm. These guys went crazy. Say, where is his uniform? He say, no, the HR say we cannot give him a job until he bring his passport and then a resident visa. This guy, I don't know, he took my UN card, and he took me with him, and he said, let's go back. We went back, and he said, hey, this boy, I am the one who bring him here, so he's going to be under my responsibility, and he will bring his passport on date 18. So for these days, he will wait until date 18 is my responsibility, and if something going to happen with him, I will take the charge. And now he have to stay here with me because he's not going anywhere. He should wait for his passport on date 18. And then they're talking. I actually, I'm thinking like, it's finished. It's not going to work. So this guy, they accept and they give him the uniform and they came to me and they take me. And now I'm in an animation team now. It's crazy. So I work with him. On date 18 came, nobody asked me again about my passport. 1 month finished, nobody asked me about the passport. I stay until I make enough money. And then I say, okay, now it's time for me like to make a passport. I went to the embassy in Cairo, South Sudan embassy. And then I get my passport. And I was, it was also, this is before anything happened, before like any problem happened in Europe. You know, everything was like quite good. A lot of people was coming to Hurghada. And also the economic system in Cairo, it was also very good. So a lot of people, they was like asking me to invite me to Holland. I met like so many guests there. So they was asking me and they say, you should get your passport because next time we come back, we will take you with us to Holland for like a best day party. So I went and I make my passport. I say, okay, now I should be ready with the passport thing because maybe next time something good is going to happen to me for my next move. I got the passport. I have my passport now, but I didn't have inside a resident visa in the passport. I have it only in the UN card. So there I make quite like a little money. Was also I met one guy from my country. He was working there before me in some other hotel. And then we met there and we together made a plan. That's the plan going to take us to Libya now. After I stay in Hurghada and make up some money with my friend, he told me this plan and he said, like, we're going to go to Libya. And then when we go to Libya there, we can pay these guys money. And then they can take us to Lampedusa. Those was all his plan. That was not my plan. I was not thinking about it. I was never thinking about like crossing the sea from Libya to go there. It was like for me, it was the last decision.
To come to Europe. You wanted to come to Europe via ship.
Yes. I wanted to come to Europe, but I didn't want to come in the sea, you know?
Yeah,
I didn't want to come in the sea. So my friend, he made a plan with me, and I refused to go with him. So he went to Cairo, and then from Cairo, he go to Alexandria. And then after a week, he called me. He called me in WhatsApp in Libya. And he say, hey, man, I'm calling you because I want to show you the way, you know? So the way is like this and like this, and now I'm in Libya now. So easy. So you can also do it, like to come there. And I was like, yeah, really? He said, yes, it's so easy. So you just don't need to worry about anything. I was like, okay. And then we disappear like for 3 weeks or like 4 weeks. We didn't talk again. I focus with work because actually coming to Libya, it was not in my thought. So after 3 weeks or like 4 weeks, I see the post on Facebook so that they make it to Libya, to Lampedusa. They are in Lampedusa in Italy, and he make a photo and he post it on Facebook, and then his photo, a lot of people, they like his photo. It became like almost 100,000 people, they like his video. So when I saw the guy make it to Libya, from Libya to Lampedusa, and also he called me again. He said, look, bro, you don't have to worry. Now I'm in Lampedusa now. You can also make it. So do it like I told you. From Cairo, you can go to Alexandria. And then from Alexandria, you can take people there. They can take you by bus, and you can easily come to Libya. And then from Libya, if you don't have money, you can go for work in Libya to make money so you can pay these guys. If you have money, you can pay them and they can bring you to La Medusa direct.
Okay.
Now I like the situation. I say, okay, if you are already there just for like 4 weeks or like 5 weeks, so why not? I can also make it.
Mm-hmm.
I rush. I get some money. And then I quit my job. But I quit my job like it was we quarreled when I left the job because they didn't let me want me to go. But I was like, knowing that I'm not going to come back, like I'm going to go to Europe. So I take my luggage and everybody was like, no, you cannot go because you signed a contract with us. And I was like, yeah, I have to go now because I have another plan. Say, okay, if you are going, we will not give you any money because you canceled the contract by yourself.
Okay.
So you can go, hit the street and go. I say, okay, no problem. It was only 1 month salary. So I went, get the car, go to Alexandria. And then from Alexandria, we get the car like he told me. And then the guys, they drive us to the border, of Libya. And we're getting there. They didn't want, they cannot enter into the Libya like border, but they stop in the border. And then they told us after 30 minutes, we're going to walk and then we will find a big city in front of us. So we went down in the border and then we just start running, jacking in the desert, you know. We're running, jacking. And then the police show out nowhere. We didn't actually know where they came from. Like three cars. And maybe they saw us in the cameras or I don't know.
How many people were you? Were you and how many other people?
We was five.
Five people, okay.
Yeah, we was five guys. All of us, we was from South Sudan. All of us.
Okay.
So, these guys, I met them in Alexandria also. They was like waiting for other people so they can complete the car payment and so they can come.
Okay.
So, we coming and then there's the car just show up and they was like, stop. The other guy, they start running. But like for me, I was in the middle. This guy is here and this guy is here. I cannot find a way to run. So this guy, they run, and this guy, they run, and they literally shot one guy. They shot one guy in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two guys who ran from my left-hand side, they ran. And then the two guys who ran from my right-hand side, they shot one guy, and the one guy, he fell down alone because he saw somebody get shot next to him. So something told me, just put your hand in your head. I put my hand in my head, you know. So I put my hand up again. They came, they take me, put me on the ground. And, you know, like with the gun, they hit us with the, this side.
Mm-hmm.
And then they handcuffed me. They put me in the car. Was the guy was his leg injured and the other guy, it's like three of us. These two guys, they ran. I don't know if they catch them or they didn't catch them. Until I left the Libya, I don't know. So they take us, three of us, and they put us in police custody. They keep us for 3 days together. And then after 3 days, they take the guy, they shot his leg. They take him to the hospital. And then it's two of us. The inside there's like a lot of people from Ghana and a lot of people from Nigeria, from like all around Africa. A lot of people, they are there. That's where they keep us. And some people, they are saying like really, really negative things. They say, some people, they say they stay there for 3 years. And some people are saying they are staying there for like 5 years.
Okay.
So I am in my head, I'm thinking like, this is the same thing going to happen to me. So I'm going to stay there like for 3 years, 5 years. If I stay there for 3 years, 5 years, what's the meaning of life again?
And excuse me, dude, it was like a prison, like a room you were arrested to with the other guys from Africa.
It's like, you know, they make it like a room. Yeah. It's like one room like this, and then inside the room there's like 45 to 48 person. Wow, in the, okay. in the room.
Okay.
Yeah, like every room is like 45, like something like that. Yes.
Okay.
Because they keep you in the room here. If you have a problem in this room, they can like take you to another room, and also if there's a problem gonna happen, also they can put you in another room. So I was in like maybe like 6 to 7 room there. Mm-hmm. So this is my life in Libya. And also when I realized like something is not going to work, because like people are telling me that they are staying for many years, I was thinking about giving up. I was saying, okay, if I'm gonna stay for this long, so I have to, like, I don't know if I can find the way I can give it up, kill myself or something, but this is really hard, bro.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. Like, you know, somebody to kill your own self, this is the hardest decision ever. It's not so easy, yes. So I'm trying. Sometimes, you know, I go like for a whole day, I'm not drinking any water, because I just want to get sick and then die. And then at the end of the day, I'm still going to drink water, you know.
Hmm.
And then maybe like some of the time I refuse to eat, because they bring us like some bread with jam and sweet. And then maybe like some other weeks, I refuse to eat like for 2 days, something like this, because I want to just, maybe something can happen to me and just. But no, at the end of like 3 to 4 days, I can also eat, you know. So I also like finding a way, like if there's somebody inside the room that can be aggressive to me and we can fight, like maybe we kill each other. There's no way. I am fighting with, even people are scared from me. Everybody is like, people that are scared from me, they don't want to fight with me. Some other people, they say this guy lost his mind, you know. Also like we are in the situation now and we cannot, we have to be strong and like each other, and maybe one day something is going to be great for all of us. And then also like when they say something emotional like this, my mind came back again, and then I make peace with everybody, and we live again together.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I was like just like, you know, somebody come to, policeman come to open the door, a jail. And then I was like just speaking up. I was like, hey man, you cannot keep me here. I am a refugee in Cairo. So I have my refugee papers. And I should go back to Cairo, because I cannot go back to my country and something like this. So this guy, he actually listened to me for what I said, and he went outside and he like told somebody else. And then this is after 3 months and 18 days. After 3 months and 18 days, somebody came to me and he asked me, what is your name? And I say my name to him. He say, okay, come. They take me outside and they bring like some computer and they are typing in the computer. And he asked me, did you say that you was a refugee in Cairo? And I said to him, yes. And he said, do you know your refugee's number? Because they give us some numbers in the mm-hmm. card. And I was like, yeah. So I typed the number in the computer, and they opened the file, and they find my case was open. It's not closed. So they call a UN agency in Cairo, and they asked them if I could be deported back to my country or I should be taken to Cairo. And they say, this guy should come back to Cairo. Oh, I can't believe myself. So I went inside, and I am the most happiest person in the room. You know, I am so happy. Even other people, they are so happy also with me. Also, I make them smile. I told them that I'm going to leave, you know. And then the guy, actually, they told me, like, at 10 o'clock in the evening, the car, the police car will come, and then they put me in the car, and they will take me to the car. I don't have idea. I have no idea that I am going to be arrested also in Cairo again. I thought, like, I'll go to Cairo, and then they let me go or something like that. So I came to Cairo. They bring me to the border, and then they give me to the Egyptian police in the border. And, you know, we drive inside the Cairo with the Egyptian police. So when we coming to Egypt, I was thinking maybe like they can drop me like a bus station or like somewhere, and then they told me to find somewhere to sleep. I have no idea. So they say they take me to the police station with them, and then the police also take me like a Libyan police, and they arrested me. But it was only one day. It's not that long. They put me in the jail, and then in the morning, the three guys came, and they called me out in the jail, and they investigate me, like what we are doing, me and you now. I explain a live story and what happened, how did I leave the country, and something like this. And yeah, after I finished the conversation with them, they say to me, this guy, he don't mean anything about what happened to him and something. So they call the police guys, and then they say to him that they should take me with them. So, like, everything is finished. I don't have any problem. I didn't do any mistake. So, and they should take me with him so they can go and put my case with my UN case, you know, because you have, mm-hmm. everybody have a case in this.
Mm-hmm.
So we went there. They take me there. And also one lady also from the UN, she interviewed me also. And yes, she put all my case together with my file. And yeah. And they give me some place to stay. But this place I was staying, it was not the same. Because I already, when I was in Cairo, I already went to Hurghada, and I work with animation company. So now I have a big, you know, big experience.
Mm-hmm.
So they take me and they put me with some other people from my country, like a small house together.
In Cairo.
And they, this is UN, and they are like supporting us from one, but, after but, 1 month.
I'm sorry, good. It was in Cairo, right?
Huh?
In Cairo, right?
Yeah, it was in Cairo, yeah. This okay. is after I came back from Libya, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's it. In Cairo. And now, when they put us with these guys, they put me with these guys from my country, we living together, life is not the same again because I already have experience. So I decide to, as long as I'm free now, I have to go back again to Hurghada.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to Hurghada. But when I was coming back to Hurghada, it's not the same before, like before, because, you know, like I came with scared. I think maybe you saw them in my face, yes?
Yeah, yeah. Where do you have your scar from?
In Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I came with a scar mm-hmm. on my face. So
you got it in Libya in prison when you were arrested?
In prison, yes. At, I told you when I was aggressive to people, sometimes we can just fight for no reason. So I went back to Hurghada. I tried to look for some places. No, it was not easy to find. Some of the people are talking about my skirt, and they was like, no, we cannot give you a job like this. I went back to my old company that I work with them. My friend from Libya, from Tunisia that I met, I told you, he introduced me to animation. He refused me. He said, no, I cannot give you a job because last time you left and you didn't finish your contract. And now you came back and you came back as a different person. You're not the same like before because you got this scared in your face. So I'm worried about what you plan that you came back with it. So there is no job for you. Wish you best of luck. So now we're like thinking if I can go back again to McDonald's. McDonald's is just like working, but it was not cleaning and all this stuff was not my it was not my thing. I want maybe like I can be a chef, like, you know, to make like nice food to people. Because I know like I can do something like this. I believe in myself. But some other people, when they see, they be like, no, they can.
So, okay. So you were back to Hogada again and you had a scar in your face because of your fight in Libya. And then you tried to get a new job again at the animation team in the hotels.
Yes. So I am back now. But I couldn't, it was not easy. I couldn't find something and I didn't believe in myself that I'm going to find it again because a lot of people was giving me a negative energy from animation bosses. They was like, no, nobody's going to give you a job because you have a scar in your face. So people are thinking maybe you're a criminal, something like this. But I luckily find somebody in Marsalam. It was on phone. So I called them, I sent them my old pictures, he saw them and he said, okay, you can come. Then after I went to Mos Alam, I met there, it was animation guy from animation team also is like working with us. So he didn't have any clue that because they need somebody like me. So they give me a job, I stay with them. Everything is fine, enjoy working for like 2 years with them. And then after 2 years, this is when I came to Sunrise Garden. And in Sunrise Garden, I couldn't stay there for so long. It was when you came, I think I told you I had 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
I had 1 month, yes, in the hotel. And then you came there and I met actually with a lot of people that we still like talk even today. They asked about me in Sunrise. And yeah, in Sunrise I was ready like to take another decision or like, other plans for my future or something like this. And I was thinking about settling down in Sunrise and just take animation a bit more serious and try to make it as a future plan now, because I was thinking like I'm getting older and all my plan they are so scattered because of this and this and that. So I was taking Sunrise Animation Company a bit more serious, and then even actually after you left, I was making a step aerobic course. Yes, I was making my step aerobic course, and then this is step aerobic course I was like watching on YouTube, like something quite professional. And then later I would try like to go and practice with the guests, because I was planning to get this right. And then after I get this right, maybe I can try to find a job in Maldives, like a step aerobic instructor, something like this. So when you left, everything collapsed. The Egyptian government, they was like looking for, they was like saying like a lot of people they stay in their country without pass, without visas. And they start with the animation team and the dancers. So that's how they came to the hotel. I think maybe like 3 weeks or like 4 weeks after you left. And they get us like an easy case. They take us to Hurghada, Egyptian police, and they keep us there, like knowing like we're going to get out like in the evening. Actually, I had an appointment date for the visa, because my visa, it just happened on date 11. It was not so long. So I have to wait for an appointment, and then I will go like to the office to go and get my new visa. So they couldn't give me a chance. They put me in the jail like for 23 days. And then after 23 days, they come to me and they ask me if I have any money to buy a ticket. But I was happy. I want to go outside because the situation was not nice also inside. They were also beating some people from Europe, from North America also, from Haiti. So they asked me if I had the money, and I had a little money. I told them I have to go outside and call the company, so the company should bring my money to buy a ticket. So take me outside, and they get me the phone. I call the company, and the company bring my money that I work for them. And I bought a ticket, but they refused to bring my clothes or my shoes or anything that I had in Egypt. They just take me in the car and they bring me to Cairo. And then from the Cairo also, I sleep one day in the police jail. And then on 24, we get in the plane. And then we came back home. I came back home. So that's my story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very impressive. So you were back at South Sudan again, and you are not back at the origin city you lived in, but you are at the capital, right? Juba?
Yes.
Okay. But do you know any person in Juba?
Yeah, like right now, yes. When I came back here, I actually know a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people that they are from the same tribe, because people here in South Sudan, they live with the clans. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I met actually my cousin, his mother and my father, they are like brothers and sister. His mother and my father, yeah. A mother.
And that's the place where I live right now.
So this is the place where I live right now. Yeah, I actually came back from Egypt, you know, like people couldn't believe that I am that big, because now I'm a big man, you know. Yeah.
How long have it been? How long have it been that you have been to South Sudan?
I haven't been in South Sudan for 15 years.
Wow, okay. And the whole time you didn't see your mother, right?
And all this time I haven't seen my mother. I haven't seen my mother.
But have you been in contact? Did you call her? Does she have WhatsApp? Or do you have any?
No, she don't have a WhatsApp, but she's the one sometime, because some of the people, they go to the place where she live. Mm-hmm. She, where she live, actually, there's no like internet, like Wi-Fi or like SIM or network. Actually, they don't exist until now. So she can sometime go to a town. Do you remember the town I told you that we used to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. She can go there sometime, and she can ask other people to call me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I think maybe something like, when I was in Egypt, we talked like something like 5 times. But well, she...
In 15 years.
Yeah, for 15 years, but she didn't believe. She don't believe that that's me. She was thinking like maybe some other people, they are pretending to be me. So she cannot be like a heart attack or something, because she used to believe that I don't live anymore.
Okay.
And actually
you also told me that when you would have some money, it would be a wish or a small dream from you to visit her again.
Yeah, this was actually my plan. Actually, now I want to visit her, because actually I am here also, and we only talk in the phone now sometimes. She called me. And she also don't believe that, she still have a doubt, you know. She still have a doubt, like, that's not you. And if that was you, you would not even be coming and stay in Juba for like 1 month now and a half, and you are not coming to see me. So maybe there's somebody outside there who is playing with me, and they just want to give me a hope so I cannot lose my hope. But I don't believe, because you are my only child, and you stay already for many years, and now you say you are in Juba and you cannot come to see me. Something really emotional, you know. But I hope one day I'm going to see her.
And why don't you visit her now? Because you don't have the money to drive to her?
Yeah, when I was coming in Egypt, I told you I was not prepared. And also, this little money that you're helping me these days, they are not enough to go there. Of course, also, I need to take a plane, because I can't go by a car, because on the way it's really dangerous. People stop cars and they can sometime kill you or something like that. So I need, like, at least if I have like 250 to take a fly here, and then also I should come back also by fly. But fly also is stopped from a city that I told you, and then I will take a car to go to the village.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we all can help you to collect some money for your first dream, just to visit your mother, and hopefully for your second dream to find a solution to come to Europe, to work here, to have a chance in life, to just be able to work and to not live in the political situation you live right now in South Sudan, because it's very dangerous in Sudan, a civil war, South Sudan. Normally we don't get any information here in Europe, but if you do your research, you see that maybe there's some violent armed attacks there as well. So let's try to get you out of there. And therefore we all need the people who listen to this podcast, hopefully up to this point. And the rest of the information I will give you in German, how you can send some money to Dut, how we can help Dut. And maybe we can make a podcast series out of it, and more often talk to Dut when we collected some money, and just check in how it worked, how we could help you, how you could maybe do a little business there up in South Sudan, or maybe we can find a solution, find a plan how to get you here to you, so someone can help you, and you can try to live your life, the newest part of your life in Europe, hopefully. Thank you so much, Dud. Thank you so much. And maybe the last words are up to you. You want to tell our listeners something at the last point of the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much also, Dominic, and also for everybody who is going to listen to this. Life is just for other people. They have a different life. Actually, most of the people, they don't have the same life. This is my life, but for some other people who never had something like this, it's like, for them, it's like a dream, you know? And what is life about? Is actually, life is actually a dream. So we are dreaming for everything we are going through, for everything we are feeling. It's just a dream. And also, if I could not leave my village when I was young, I wouldn't be able like to experience or like to have like... to get to know this is what life is actually about. So what I get about life now, I don't worry anymore. I just like enjoy any place that I stay. And I wish like everybody also could also take it easy as much, or anytime they are any situation, a good situation or bad situation, they could just take it easy, because what I told you here in my story journey, there was like a down. I feel like I'm down, but tomorrow I'm up. I go down, and then tomorrow I find myself up again. And even now I came back home, it feel like this is like down, but I also believe that something is going to work on this, like, you know, I'm going to help tomorrow and it's going to be better. So
you never know if it's good or if it's bad. It's always a part of your perspective, right?
Yeah. So I hope everybody who gonna listen to this will also learn something from my life experience, like what I learned. And thank you so much, Dominic.
Thank you, and I think we will meet each other again.
Yeah. Understood. Thank you, brother.
Wie besprochen, versuche ich aus den ersten zwei Gesprächen, die ich mit Dutt hatte, die Stichpunkte mal zusammenzufassen und euch natürlich nicht so schön wie Dutt das machen kann, nur zumindest in aller Kürze, wenn ihr kein Englisch versteht, zusammenzufassen, was Dutt für einen Weg hinter sich hatte. Ich versuche das natürlich so kurz wie möglich zu machen, ohne euch dann mit den Details, die ich dann auch gar nicht so weit kennen kann, zu langfallen. Also, Dutt ist in einem kleinen Dorf geboren worden und hat dort auch seine Kindheit verbracht im Südsudan, einem sehr armen Land, eines der ärmsten Länder der Welt. Südsudan ist nicht zu verwechseln mit dem Sudan, wo seit Jahren auch ganz erbitterter Bürgerkrieg herrscht und stand jetzt auch wieder zumindest gewisses Konfliktpotenzial, gewisses Auswärtigen Amtes im Südsudan stattfinden kann. Ist also tatsächlich eine Region, die ziemlich polarisierend ist und dort auch, ja, es jederzeit zu Problemen führen kann. Dutt hat auch mir im Nachgang erzählt, hey, es scheint hier irgendwie gerade wieder ein bisschen heißer zu werden in Südsudan, natürlich nicht bezogen auf das Klima, sondern auf das politische Klima. Und Dutt hat in diesem Dorf seinerzeit gewohnt, ohne Strom. Und das erste Mal, dass er sich erinnern konnte, das war, dass er quasi dann Bewusstsein auch in diesem Dorf hatte. Seine Mutter hat dann irgendwann keine Perspektive mehr gesehen. Dutts Vater ist gestorben, als Dutt noch ganz, ganz klein war. Er hat ihn also nie kennengelernt und die Mutter hat tatsächlich Dutt und seine zwei Schwestern allein aufgezogen und musste dann irgendwann in eine größere Stadt ziehen. Den Namen der Stadt, den habe ich leider von Dutt nicht erfahren können. Ich bin mir gar nicht sicher, ob Dutt weiß, in welcher Stadt er da war. Und dort hat Dutt dann tatsächlich so ein bisschen seine Kindheit verbracht, hatte da dann das erste Mal auch Bezug zu Fernsehern, zu großen Gebäuden, zu Automobilen. Also alles, was ihm gänzlich entwert wurde in seinem Dorf. Und seine Mutter hat dort immer Leute unterstützt, hat dort ein bisschen gearbeitet. Er war dort aber auch in so eine Kommune-Gemeinschaft eingebunden, konnte dort dann quasi überleben, hat auch mal Flaschen gesammelt, um dann so ein bisschen was dazu zu verdienen. Und irgendwann ist die Mutter dann aber wieder zurück in dieses Dorf mit der Familie und Dutt hat's vermisst. Er hat dann einfach gesagt, als heranwachsender Jugendlicher, der dann schon so langsam in diese vorpubertäre Phase offenkundig gekommen ist, ich möchte nicht zurück und mein Leben in diesem Dorf leben, weil er dort keine Perspektive für sich gesehen hat und wahrscheinlich auch gesagt hat, es wird uns wahrscheinlich gemeinsam schwerfallen, hier zu überleben, ist er tatsächlich von diesem Dorf aus weitergezogen, zurück in die Stadt alleine. Ist also quasi ausgebuchst und hat sich dann alleine eine ziemlich lange Zeit mit auch anderen Kindern in der Stadt durchgeschlagen. Hat dann tatsächlich von der Hand im Mund gelebt. Es war wohl eine sehr schwere Zeit, weil er versucht hat, als Kind dann halt auch irgendwo Arbeit zu finden und hat dann als Schuhputzer angefangen, hat von Menschen die Schuhe poliert und hat dafür ein kleines Salär dann zumindest sich immer über Wasser halten können. Seine Mutter hat ihn dann irgendwann gesucht oder auch schon lange gesucht. Die muss ganz verrückt gewesen sein. Versorger hat ihn dann dort auch gefunden. Und haben aber dann gemeinsam beschlossen, dass Dutts Leben in der Stadt weitergehen wird, während die Mutter zurück ins Dorf gezogen ist. Dutt hat dann vor Ort in der Stadt das Glück gehabt, dass er die Schuhe eines Lehrers geputzt hatte. Das war nicht nur ein Lehrer, sondern auch ein Direktor einer Schule. Und dieser Direktor hat ihm gesagt, Dutt, du kannst bei uns die Schule besuchen, was du bisher noch nicht getan hast. Im Alter von 13 Jahren, meinte er, musste er dort circa gewesen sein. Dafür musst du aber bitte die Schuhe der Lehrer putzen. Und so hat Dutt dann die Schuhe der Lehrer geputzt und hat dafür die Grundbasis in der Schule gelernt. Das ist anders als bei uns. Das gab es keine 13 Jahre Schule, sondern er meint, es waren so 1 bis 2 Jahre, die er zur Schule gegangen ist, dass er Lesen, Schreiben und Rechnen gelernt hat. Er hat sich vieles wohl schon selbst im Vorfeld beigebracht, einfach weil er das dann auch in gewisser Hinsicht in der Stadt gebraucht hat. Es war so ein bisschen Learning by Doing scheinbar in seinem Leben. Irgendwann, und da habe ich so ein bisschen den direkten Bezug verloren, wie die er von dort aus weitergekommen ist, aber hat er die Möglichkeit gehabt, nach Ägypten zu kommen und ist dann tatsächlich über Fußwege und über Möglichkeiten mit dem Auto über den Südsudan, durch den Sudan bis nach Kairo gefahren, also nochmal durch den kompletten Teil Ägyptens und war dann dort als Junge tatsächlich alleine ohne seine Familie in einem fremden Land und ohne Englisch zu sprechen, in einem Land, wo keine seiner nativen Sprache gesprochen wurde. Wo im Wesentlichen Arabisch und Englisch gesprochen wurde. Er dann auf sich allein gestellt war und hat dort bei McDonald's gearbeitet als Tellerwäscher. Ja. Leider endet die Geschichte nicht bisher zumindest vom Tellerwäscher zum Millionär, sondern er wurde da dann tatsächlich auch gut betreut. Ihm ging es da wohl ganz gut, aber das war dann letztlich nicht die Perspektive, die er haben wollte in Kairo. Ist dann von Kairo aus auf die Idee gekommen, dass er dann auch in Hurghada arbeiten könnte, und zwar als Animateur. Ist dann über viele Umwege in den Animateurbereich gekommen und hat hier aber nicht lange gearbeitet, weil er wieder getrieben war von einem Traum halt von mehr. Und dieser Traum von mehr wurde beflügelt von einem Freund von ihm, der gesagt hatte, hey, es gibt Möglichkeiten, nach Europa zu kommen. Wenn man das jetzt hört, denkt man sich vielleicht, okay, Europa, Flüchtlinge in Europa, das ist doch bei uns auch ein großes politisches Thema und mit Sicherheit wird das bei uns auch häufig so gebrandet, dass man sagt, ja, das sind Wirtschaftsflüchtlinge, die wollen hier im Sozialsystem schmarotzen. Es ist ja leider so, dass man irgendwie inzwischen von vielerlei Seiten hört, das sei so Ursus, dass Leute das so denken. Dude wusste nichts vom Sozialsystem. Dude wusste nichts von Arbeitslosengeld. Dude wusste nichts von 40-Stunden-Wochen. Dude hat gesagt, er hat sein Leben lang immer 60 Stunden gearbeitet. Er hat nie Geld bekommen, sondern wurde letztlich immer nur mehr oder weniger entlohnt für das, was er gemacht hat in Form von Nahrung. Und Dude hatte keine Ahnung. Er wollte einfach nur ein besseres Leben haben. Das hat er mir sehr glaubhaft geschildert. Vielleicht einfach, um da mögliche Assoziationen schon im Vorfeld im Keim zu ersticken. Er hat dann also seinen Job in Hurghada doch relativ fluchtartig verlassen, was auch nicht zum Besten war in Bezug auf die Arbeitsstelle, die er dort angetreten hat, und wollte sein Glück probieren. Ist dort dann aber leider gescheitert an der Grenze in Libyen. Und zwar wurde er, als er dann versucht hatte, über einen Schmuggler dann über Libyen nach Italien überzusatteln, in einer Wüstenregion, wo er dann abgesetzt wurde und einfach nur weglaufen wollte, gefasst und wurde dann inhaftiert. Er ist inhaftiert worden in einem Gefängnis in der Nähe von oder in Libyen, und dort war er in einem Raum mit, und so hat er mir das zumindest vor Ort auch in Ägypten erzählt, mit 30 bis 40 Leuten, das war immer wechselnd, und er hat die Sprache nicht gesprochen, sie wurden auch, selbst wenn die Sprache gesprochen wurden, bewusst im Unglauben gelassen, was mit ihm passiert. Er wusste also nicht, ob er den Rest seines Lebens dort verbringen wird, in diesem Gefängnis oder nicht. 40 Leute in einem libyschen Gefängnis, das stelle ich mir nicht schön vor. Er hat mir dann beispielsweise auch erzählt, wie sie ernährt wurden. Es wurden einfach Fleischreste, Knochen, Innereien genommen in einem Plastikeimer, und sie wurden dann einfach auf den Boden gekippt und alle 40 Leute haben sich da drauf geschmissen. Das war sein Leben. So hat er dann gegessen und das hat er eine gewisse Zeit lang ausgehalten, und er meinte, dann ist er seelisch zerbrochen. Er hat dann auch gesagt, er wollte sich dort das Leben nehmen, er wollte nicht mehr weiterleben, aber es ist nicht möglich gewesen, sich dort das Leben zu nehmen. Also es war wohl nicht so einfach, wie man sich das vorstellt. Er hat versucht, den Hungerstreik zu treten und nicht zu trinken, aber der Geist hat ihn dann doch immer wieder zurückgerufen und gesagt, hey, du musst was essen. Das hat also nicht geklappt. Er hat dann dort versucht, mit anderen Leuten Streit anzufangen, in der Hoffnung, dass sie ihn erschlagen. Dies war so weit, dass jemand ihm, und das, ich weiß nicht, ob man das in seinem Video erkennen kann, aber die komplette Lippe aufgeschnitten hat, bis zum Ohren. Also er hat dort eine riesige Narbe und ja, ist dann tatsächlich oder hat versucht, über diesen Weg rauszukommen. Das hat so nicht funktioniert. Er ist zum Glück nicht verstorben, sondern konnte dann als junger Mann nochmal das Glück genießen, dass er nach Kairo gekommen ist, tatsächlich über ein Passverfahren, und ist dann dort von Kairo auch weitergekommen nach Hurghada, wieder in diesem Animationsjob eingestellt worden, und da kam ich dann ins Spiel, da haben wir uns dann tatsächlich getroffen. Ich hatte ihm einfach gesagt, hey Dude, ich finde irgendwie dein Leben interessant und vielleicht kann ich dir ja in irgendeiner Form helfen, vielleicht können wir in Verbindung bleiben. Und wir hatten immer mal hin und her geschrieben, und irgendwann kam dann 30 Tage nichts mehr. Hab ich gewundert, ist ja seltsam. Naja, vielleicht wollt ihr den Kontakt abbrechen, und irgendwann kam dann eine Rückmeldung, hey Dominik, ich tut mir leid, dass ich nicht geschrieben habe, ich bin wieder im Südsudan. Da habe ich mich gewundert, was machst du da? Er hat gesagt, ja, ich bin inhaftiert worden in Hurghada, mein Visum war abgelaufen. Ich habe versucht, mir im Vorfeld einen Termin zu sichern, aber es gab keine Terminvergabe mehr. Und in Ägypten wurde tatsächlich gerade eine ziemlich große Aktion gestartet, dass Ägypten dann in Anführungsstrichen bereinigt wurde von Nicht-Ägyptern und diese dann quasi wieder in ihre Herkunftsländer geschickt wurden. Das heißt, das Geld, was sie sich dann in der Zeit noch zusammensparen hatte können und die Klamotten, alle seine Habseligkeiten wurden zurückgelassen. Er wurde vom Hotel direkt ins Gefängnis gesteckt und dann mit den paar Euro, die er noch hatte, die wurden abgenommen, um den Flug dann nach in den Südsudan zu vollziehen. Er befindet sich da gerade in der Landeshauptstadt und hat dort eine Cousine, die er kennt, hat aber natürlich keine Perspektive, keinen Job, kennt dort niemanden und ja, versucht als Macher, wie er ist, das positiv zu sehen. Aber im jetzigen Fall ist die Lage relativ aussichtslos für ihn, dort in irgendeiner Form in Lohn und Brot zu kommen oder dort wieder eine neue Perspektive zu bekommen. Und so ist Ludwig, er gerade beschreibt, im Alter von inzwischen 28 Jahren, ja, jetzt wieder am Anfang da, wo er gewesen ist, sehr verzweifelt. Und ich glaube, das ist nichts Außergewöhnliches, was wir hier beschreiben. Das habe ich ja eingangs schon gesagt. Ich glaube auch nicht, dass das der schlimmste Fall ist, den man jetzt finden kann. Ich glaube, das ist einfach ein ganz normaler Fall eines Mannes, der gesagt hat, ich möchte mein Leben selber in die Hand nehmen. Ich möchte eine Perspektive haben. Ich möchte vielleicht auch mehr als nur zu hoffen, dass ich den nächsten Tag überlebe, weil ich was zu essen und zu trinken bekomme. Ich möchte etwas vom Leben. Und wer kann ihm das vergönnen? Ich kann es nicht. Ganz im Gegenteil, ich gönne ihm das sogar. Und deswegen sind wir nochmals auf euch angewiesen. Wir werden den Link von betterplace.org auf jeden Fall nochmal hier reinstellen, sodass ihr kräftig für ihn Spenden sammeln könnt. Ich würde mich total freuen. Es wäre mir wirklich ein persönliches Anliegen, wenn wir für ihn einfach ein bisschen was auf die Beine stellen können. Und nochmals, ich verspreche da hoch und heilig, versucht dann, dass wir ihn in erster Instanz erstmal ein Treffen mit seiner Mutter ermöglichen können und in zweiter Instanz, das wäre mir viel, viel wichtiger, dass wir eine Möglichkeit hätten, ihn in irgendeiner Form so zu unterstützen, wie auch immer das aussehen mag. Da werde ich mit Sicherheit noch einige Telefonate und Organisationen führen müssen, aber da bin ich dann recht hartnäckig, dass wir irgendeine Möglichkeit haben, ihm eine Perspektive im Leben zu geben und das wäre doch was ganz Tolles nochmals, wenn wir hier alle Perspektivgeber wären und Perspektivgeberin und von daher würde ich mich total freuen, wenn ihr mich und vor allen Dingen dort unterstützt. Nochmals, den Link werde ich hier posten und ich kann jetzt schon mal Danke sagen und wie immer am Ende des Podcasts, haut rein und bleibt geschmeidig.